That's what effort is all about. So here we're basically looking at that, how to deal with the mind, how to remove problems, and all of these kind of things. So we are now still working on the sixth factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. This is what this is all about. We have just seen the way to how to use wisdom to overcome defilements. And now I want to continue with that idea. I want to look specifically at how to overcome ill will. One of all the defilements in the mind, by far the most profitable one, the most important one to overcome is ill will. Because ill will is so painful, it causes so many problems, it leaves us kind of miserable in so many different ways. It also tends to make us create so much bad karma when we have ill will. Sensuality, it's good to have some understanding of that as well, but it is by nowhere near as important. On the later parts of the path, it is very important, but on the earlier parts of the path, overcoming ill will is far more important. And this is why I want to emphasize that. And also, it is much easier, it is relatively easy to understand how ill will can be overcome, but it's much more profound to understand sensuality in all its aspects. So this is what this next sutta is about. This is spoken by Venerable Sariputta. And I said yesterday that the word of the Buddha is always the highest. And all the disciples, a few days ago, whenever it was, and all the other disciples kind of come after the Buddha. But of all the other disciples, it is usually Venerable Sariputta who is kind of placed the highest. And the Buddha sometimes says things like, well, if anyone is going to carry on my teaching into the future, it is Venerable Sariputta who is going to do that. He was almost placed on the same level as the Buddha himself in terms of wisdom and these kind of things. So this sutta is actually spoken by him. So that is that. So let's hear what he has to say. Removing resentment from the Anguttara 5, 162. This is one of the suttas I always like to read out on any meditation retreat that I do, because it is very practical and kind of gets to the one of the core things that we have to sort out. And of course, one of the great benefits of overcoming ill will as a mental thing, if we can overcome that to some extent, it has tremendous benefits also on the rest of our habits, right? On our verbal habits and bodily habits, because so much of that is driven by these powerful emotions. So get the emotions and get the mind straight, then everything else tends to kind of follow in its wake, so to speak. So this is how it goes. There, the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus, friends bhikkhus. Friend, those bhikkhus replied, and the Venerable Sariputta said this. Friends, there are these five ways of removing resentment, by which a bhikkhu should entirely remove resentment when it has arisen towards anyone. And just a small little point, that is, before I go any further, it is interesting how they call each other friends, right? Friends, because friends, the monks reply. How come they don't call Venerable Sariputta? How come they don't call him Bhante? He's one of the most senior ones in the Sangha. Are they being rude, do you think? Or what is going on here? And what is going on here, which is interesting, is that before the Buddha passed away, all the monks would call each other Avuso, and Avuso means, like, it doesn't exactly mean friend, it's a bit more polite than that, but it is like a polite term among equals. It's not the kind of a term you would use among somebody you consider higher up, right? And the only person they would call Bhante was the Buddha. Everybody else would call Avuso. So even, like, if you were a young monk and you went to Venerable Sariputta, you probably called him Avuso rather than Bhante. Maybe not. Maybe if you were a kind of, you know, whippersnapper, you might call Venerable Sariputta Bhante, perhaps. But generally speaking, they would call his other friends in this way here. And that's the way it was in the early days of Buddhism. It was quite flat. It wasn't so hierarchical. But then, of course, in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the Buddha says, well, from now on, you should call each other Bhante and Avuso according to seniority. Because now I will be gone, there will be nobody to call Bhante anymore. So now these should be used according to seniority. And from then on, they start calling each other Bhante. And that is what we still do in the present day. When a monk is more senior than you, you call him Bhante. And if he's more junior, you call him by name, or you call him Avuso, or whatever here. So this is what is happening here. But it's interesting that in the early days, it was actually very flat, right? And it almost makes you wonder how all this hierarchy that we have in Buddhism, sometimes it's a bit too much of a good thing. Sometimes we could be a bit more kind of on even terms with each other, right? And kind of a bit more friendly almost, and instead of having these tremendous hierarchies. Anyway, it's just an interesting little point. Then he says there are these five ways of removing resentment, five ways should be used to remove resentment towards anyone, right? So it means that once you have applied these five ways, there is no excuse anymore to have resentment, no excuse to have ill will. Here, everything is supposed to be abandoned towards everyone. So it's bad news, isn't it? It's bad news that there is no excuse. You have to kind of get on with it and try to overcome this in all situations. So that is just to kind of set the bar really high for you right there. Let's see how this is done then. So what are these five ways? Here a person's bodily behavior is impure, but his verbal behavior is pure. One should remove resentment towards such a person. A person's verbal behavior is impure, but his bodily behavior is pure. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, but from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, and he does not gain an opening of the mind, placidity of mind, from time to time. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are pure, and from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. So here you have all kinds of people, right? And there is no excuse here for being upset with anyone, having ill will to anyone. Even the really bad guys who have all bad qualities, still you're supposed not to be upset with them. All the way to the most great saint, right, whose every behavior is right, and everyone in between is included in this. It's kind of, it's nice in a way, isn't it? It's nice to know that this is the goal. And then, of course, we have the methods, the means for actually achieving that goal coming afterwards. You can see here, this is one of the ways that the suttas are often presented. They're presented with a summary, first of all, and then you have the exposition afterwards. This is often called Udesa Vibhanga, Udesa being the summary, Vibhanga being the exposition that comes afterwards. It's just a way of making learning easier so we can actually learn what is going on. So let us now look at these five different people and how we actually deal with them. How, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily behavior is impure but whose verbal behavior is pure? Suppose a ragged-robed bhikkhu sees a rag by the roadside. He will press it down with his left foot, spread it out with his right foot, tear off an intact section, and take it away with him. So too, when a person's bodily behavior is impure, but his verbal behavior is pure, on that occasion one should not attend to the impurity of his bodily behavior, but should instead attend to the purity of his verbal behavior. In this way, resentment, or if you like, ill will or anger towards that person should be removed. Yeah, so I think it is fairly clear what is going on here. What is going on is that people have different qualities, some good, some bad. Here we talk about verbal versus bodily behavior. I think that is just an example, and I think any kind of division between a person's different qualities is acceptable here. So people have different qualities, some bad, some good, some are generous, some are wise, some are stingy, some are stupid, and you get all kinds of mixture of qualities in people. So the point here is that we learn to remember, learn to look at the good qualities in people, and then forgive and let go of the bad ones. This is what this really is about, right? We talked about that the other day, and here it is, black on white, straight from the Buddha, or Buddha's disciple anyway, Venerable Sariputta, and that is how you actually abandon these things. And to be able to do this, it is important that you actually take the time to remember the good qualities in other people. It is not doesn't happen automatically. It doesn't happen by itself. You have to sometimes really sit down and do these things, remember these things. And when you do it more or less systematically, perhaps even on a daily basis, then gradually your view starts to change. Right? A typical example would be in the case here with all the BGF members. I'm sure that sometimes you irritate each other a little bit. It's life, right? It's life that we get irritated by each other. This is just the way the world is. So then what you have to do, when that happens, you have to remember how fortunate you are to be in the company of people who are committed to kindness, to the Buddhist path, to doing what is right, to purifying themselves, to moving in the right direction. The intention is there in the right place. The motivation is there. We really want to do these things. And then you also remember how difficult is often it is to live up to those high intentions and to those high aspirations. Often very difficult to do that. And then you rejoice that there are people in the world who actually want to live so well and do the right things. People keeping the five precepts, people being generous, people doing all kind of wonderful things. Wow, how wonderful it is to be part, to be friends with people like this. Thank you for being my friends. Thank you for being part of the BGF. Thank you for practicing together. What a wonderful thing that is. And then when you remember that, you are kind of looking in a different direction. So seeing the faults, you see the big picture. You see the things that actually matter, right? The little irritations, what do they actually matter? They're nothing. They're insignificant. There are things to be thrown aside and not to be concerned about. The big picture is what matters. It's very easy, in fact, when you are with so many, when you have good people in a Buddhist society like this, it's actually relatively easy to do that. So really try your very best to do that. Also has the great benefit of creating harmony in the BGF. All Buddhist organizations have a mixture of harmony and sometimes disharmony. So by doing that, you are creating more harmony within the BGF as well. The talk I'm supposed to give on Sunday is supposed to be in harmony, so I'm warming up a little bit for that one. So remember that, right? And then you create harmony, and that again makes it even more easy to be kind to each other and to see the good sides in people. One of the great things and other great things about living in the Sangha with other people who are fully committed to the Buddhist path is that there is a lot of good qualities in those people. And at the very least, they are committed to a very inspiring and very kind of idealistic lifestyle where you really try your very best to live to the highest possible quality. And that is such a wonderful thing because it makes it much harder to fault find with the people in the Sangha, with the monks or the nuns as well. We don't have that much to do with the nuns. They live quite far away, but the same thing with them when we see them. You see all these good qualities there. And that is inspiring and it makes it easier to live in harmony within that monastic community. Another great reason for being a monastic, by the way, is that you tend to have, I mean, they're not perfect, right? That is the reality. It's always like that. But it's easy to see that the foundation is good. And that is what exactly the sort of situation you are seeing here in this particular sutta. So remember that. Build up those qualities. If there are certain people in your life that are particularly difficult for you, and we all have those people that are a little bit more difficult for us to deal with, focus on those, right? Make sure that you get that sorted out, because that is going to be a hindrance hindrance, a blockage in your meditation practice if there's one or two people that you find very difficult to deal with. See the good qualities in them, right? Make sure you focus on that. Build it up. And actually, they're not so bad after all, right? They have all these good qualities. And then even then, if they may not treat you 100% in the way you would like it or whatever, you can forgive that because you're able to see the good qualities in those people. So you learn to forgive the negative qualities. Of course, people have bad qualities in this world. Look at the world. Look at all the problems we have in life. Look at the way people are brought up. Look at the things that happen at school. There's so many bad influences. You watch TV, and what do you get? You get badness, right? Especially when you watch the news. Oh, so much badness in the world. You get it in. I wouldn't really recommend people to watch the news too much because it's not really realistic. It's not really, the world isn't really like that. You get the digest of the worst thing that happens in the globe with 7 billion people compressed into 15, 20 minutes. Of course it's going to be bad, right? But reality isn't actually like that. Reality is like being here at the BGF or meeting people on the street, right? And often those relationships are much more realistic, and very often they are good relationships. People are friendly to each other, kind to each other. That is the real world. The real world is not what you see on the news, on TV. It's just bad things compressed into a short period of time. Sometimes we have to be wise about these things. Otherwise, you can get depressed. People get depressed by watching the news too much sometimes, you know. This is one of those silly things that happens. So we need everything on the Buddhist path. It takes a certain amount of effort. It takes a certain amount of commitment. Just being able to see good qualities in others takes that commitment as well. And then we have this beautiful simile here that is worthwhile also looking at. And this is the rag-robed bhikkhu. Have you ever seen a rag-robed bhikkhu before? Maybe you haven't. I used to have a rag robe. I used to be really proud of my rag robe. When I started out as a monk in the early days, I decided I'm going to keep my first robe for my first 5 years as a monk. And by the end of those 5 years, there was nothing left of the original robe. And it was all patches all the way through, right? So that was basically a rag robe. So it's not really necessary these days because coming by robes is not that difficult. So I'm not doing that anymore, but it was just interesting to try it out. But of course, in those days in India, coming by cloth was much more difficult at that time. Cloth was considered often a luxury item and very hard often to come by for monastics. And it was natural to be a rag robe wearer. You would pick up little pieces of cloth, wherever you could find them, outside a shop. Like if there was a cloth shop somewhere, there might be pieces thrown away. Or you would go to the charnel grounds, the cemeteries, and the corpses would be there, right? And the corpses had, maybe, hopefully it was quite a fresh corpse, otherwise it would be disgusting. And you would take the cloth off the corpse and use that also to incorporate in your rag robe. Wherever you found some cloth, you would use that and make rag robes out of it. There's one story I like to tell from the Vinaya. This is the story of the first zombie, the zombie story. And this is the this was a monk who was did just this. He was going to the cemetery, going to the charnel ground. Charnel ground is a place where they burn the corpses, right? A very scary kind of place. And there was one corpse that had recently been thrown in there. And this monk was a rag robe wearer, so he thought, okay, fresh corpse, right, nice cloth. So he started taking all this cloth off this corpse. But then the corpse wasn't quite dead yet, right? So the corpse rises up, don't take my cloth, right? This was the ghost in the corpse. The ghost was still kind of there. So this was the zombie coming up and kind of going after the monk. Zombie is coming here. And then the monk doesn't pay any heed, so he takes the cloth and he starts walking back to his cutie. And the zombie comes walking behind him, right? And then at the very end, he quickly runs at the end and he kind of gets into his cutie, and then the zombie falls down outside his cutie door here. So that is the original zombie story. All zombie stories come from there. That is where it all started. That's my kind of the idea anyway, that it all started from there. So there's quite some strange stories in the Vinaya. So if you want to read some strange stories, then that is sometimes the place to go. I wouldn't really recommend it, by the way, because there's too much bad monks and bad nuns in the Vinaya. It's not very inspiring to read, but sometimes there are some fun stories in there. Anyway, so that is the rag row bhikkhu. What does he do? He sees a rag by the roadside, and he becomes very happy because it's not on a corpse. It's a rag outside of corpses, which always is a good thing. So what do you do? He presses it down with his left foot, right, holds it down, spreads it out with his right foot. And the idea here is similar to when you have a person. You take a person, right, and you kind of see all the qualities in the person. You kind of spread the person out, all the bad qualities, neutral ones, to all the good qualities over here. So you spread out all the qualities. You get an overview of what the person is about. Just like the rag row bhikkhu gets an overview of the rag by spreading it out. Once you have that overview, you tear off the intact part, right? And you throw away the garbage, the rubbish, and you take the intact part with you. In the same way, once you have seen all the good qualities in that person, you cut it off at the middle, all the bad qualities. What do you do with them? You throw it away. Why? Because it's rubbish. It is useless stuff, right? It's not something that is of any use to you whatsoever. You throw it out, and you take the good qualities. Maybe that was on this side. I can't remember now which side they were. On one of the sides were the good qualities. You take that, and you carry them with you. You take them into your heart, and you take those with you onto your spiritual path into the future. Why? Because they are useful, right? These things are things that you actually can use in our spiritual practice. It is quite interesting here that that sometimes the question arises, how do we actually know whether this person really has these bad qualities or good qualities? And that is not really the point. We don't actually know. It's impossible to know what the qualities of another person are. Firstly, the qualities are changing all the time. They're not really static. And secondly, we don't have all that much clarity about the minds of other people. It's very hard to know. It's really just our personal perception. And because of that, when we look at others, it doesn't really matter so much exactly what their qualities are. What matters is the type of perception that we have about that other person, right? And this already is useful to remember because it makes you a little bit more humble about your judgment of other people. Very often we just don't know, right? We have no idea about other people. So remember that. Yes, I may not like this person. Yes, it seems to have many, many bad qualities, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe I've misunderstood what's going on. And it makes you more open in the future to change your mind. When the person then changes in the future and it shows you all these good qualities, you think, wow, actually, there are so many good qualities there. And you have more ability to be flexible about other people when you are more humble about your judgment and about your opinion of others. So there isn't any real reality there. The reality is just some personal perception of what is going on. And because there is no real reality, because there isn't really any way of knowing whether the person is like this or like that, instead of thinking about what the person is like, instead we ask ourselves, what is it useful to focus on? What is it useful to think about? That becomes the important thing. And what is useful from a practice point of view, from a Dhamma point of view, is to see the good qualities. Right? Whether it's realistic or not is impossible to say. We can never know because the person is changing, because we are deluded, because everything is just so uncertain. Reality, forget about reality. What is important is what works and what is effective and what actually is useful on the Buddhist path. That is the only thing that matters. It's very interesting, right? It's a very kind of practical way, pragmatic way of dealing with others. Don't ask for the reality, at least not in this case. Ask instead for what is useful on the Buddhist path, and then act accordingly. So this is one of those things. Of course, I'm not saying that we should kind of be completely deluded and silly and kind of pretend that things are different from what they are. But it means we can develop things without always trying to be hyper-realistic and understand that realism has very great limits in this world because it's so hard to know what's going on. So this is the idea of this cloth, right, and the idea of tearing off the intact sections, taking the good qualities with you. And this is something you also sometimes hear about in kind of modern ideas of psychology. They have similar kind of ideas. The idea, you know, I know Ajahn Brahm teaches this sometimes, the idea that if you have problems with somebody, you take a toilet roll and you write all the good qualities on one side of the toilet paper and all the bad qualities on the other side. And when you have written it all down, you tear it off in the middle, actually. Yeah, but you tear it off anyway. You take all the bad qualities. Toilet paper, right? Where does it belong? In the toilet. And then you flush it down. You flush away. And it's a nice symbolic quality to that, because what goes into a toilet is rubbish. Right? It's bad stuff. Don't want to have anything to do with that. So those bad qualities get flushed away together with all the other rubbish. And that is kind of the nice symbolic value there. Very similar to this kind of idea that you find here. Okay, let's go on to the second one. How, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose verbal behavior is impure, but whose bodily behavior is pure? Suppose there is a pond covered with algae and water plants. A man might arrive afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty, and parched. He would plunge into the pond, sweep away the algae and water plants with his hands, drink from his cupped hands, and then leave. So too, when a person's verbal behavior is impure, but his bodily behavior is pure, on that occasion one should not attend to the impurity of his verbal behavior, but should instead attend to the purity of his bodily behavior. In this way, the resentment, the ill will, the anger, etc., towards that person should be removed. So here we have the person now. The only difference here is that this person has impure verbal behavior, but pure bodily behavior. So it's just the opposite of the previous one. That's really the whole difference. And again, I don't think it is too significant. The point is just that people are different. Some people have some good qualities. Other people have other good qualities. And sometimes it changes, right? The same person goes from having some good qualities and later on they have other good qualities. And hopefully they are increasing if the person is practicing well. So it is really just an alternative to the previous one. And the real difference here is in the simile. This has a slightly different simile in it, but also, I think, a very nice and beautiful simile. So there is a pond, right? The pond is the person, and this pond is covered with algae and water plants. Those algae and water plants, that's the bad, impure verbal behavior, right? The negative things you don't want to have anything to do with. Then this man, this person arrives, afflicted, right? Suffering, oppressed by the heat. Remember, heat here is a word for resentment, for anger, for ill will, right? So this person comes feeling hot inside, right? Oh, I'm really angry. Weary, because anger, when you are angry, then often you get tired as well. It tires you out. If you get angry afterwards, you want to go to sleep sometimes because you are kind of wasted all your energy on the anger. And you are thirsty. In this case, thirsty and parched. In this case, it just refers to someone who is looking for a way out of that anger, trying to find a solution. At the very least, this person has that much wisdom, right? You're thirsty, trying to find a solution. And then you plunge into that pond. You sweep away those bad qualities, the algae and the water plants with your hands. You don't want to see them. Don't want anything to do with the impurity of the verbal behavior. So we sweep it aside. And then, having swept those bad qualities aside, and the pure water is underneath, you drink in those pure qualities. take them on board, drink them inside. And of course, then when you leave afterwards, you carry those with you and they cool you down. When you see the good quality in somebody else, they cool you down, the anger disappears. And then this is the way you remove resentment from that person. And I like this idea of drinking it up, right? It means you take it on board in a very literal sense. And the same idea of carrying these perceptions, these ideas of other people, you carry them in your mind in exactly the same way. I often like to think of the mind or perceptions as like it's a bit like a supermarket, right? We have all these potential perceptions inside of us. And if we are wise, we can choose perceptions in the right way. We can choose to look at the person in this way or in that way. And if we have enough mindfulness and we're quick enough, we can go to that shelf of perceptions and drag down a perception that is useful for us and apply that to overcome some other perception, which is unfortunate and very unhelpful. So if you spend a bit of time in reflecting on people, seeing their good qualities, it is like you are building up a beautiful perception of that person. You place it onto that supermarket shelf, ready to be used as a kind of weapon against the negative states of mind, right? So when a negative state of mind comes, you bring down your weapon and you annihilate the negative states of mind with that. That sounds a bit violent, doesn't it? I should be a bit more soft about these things, because otherwise... But the idea, you understand the idea, because that really is what happens. It really gets obliterated and removed, because when those states, when that vision, positive vision of the person is built up, it has the power to obliterate the negative vision. This is what we mean by using wisdom power, right? This is what it means all the way through. We use our ability to reflect in the right way and then use that as a weapon against the defilements of the mind. This is exactly what wisdom power is about. And in this way, using it rightly, we do actually obliterate those negative qualities that arise inside of us. Okay. So, now, having looked at that, let us move on to the next person. How, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, but who from time to time gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind? Suppose there is a little water in a puddle. Then a person might arrive afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty, and parched. And he would think, this little bit of water is in the puddle. If I try to drink it with my cupped hands or a vessel, I will stir it up, disturb it, and make it undrinkable. Let me get down on all fours, suck it up like a cow, and depart. He then gets down on all fours, sucks the water up like a cow, and departs. So too, when a person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, but from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of mind. On that occasion, one should not attend to the impurity of his bodily and verbal behavior, but should instead attend to the opening of the mind, the placidity of the mind he gains from time to time. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. So here we have a person who has many bad qualities and only a few good ones. His speech is not all that great. The bodily conduct is not really very good. But he gets this other thing, this opening of the mind, placidity of the mind. So what does that mean? And the word here for opening of mind is vivarana. And vivarana is the opposite of nivarana. Nivarana means the five hindrances, right? So vivarana means freedom from those five hindrances. And that is what opening of the mind here is, the abandoning, the removal of these five hindrances. Placidity of the mind means the mind is peaceful. placid means kind of peaceful. The water is placid, it's calm. It reflects perfectly because it's completely flat water. The mind is like that, flat, no ruffles, no kind of waves or of anger or boiling of anger in there. It's completely flat. It's not disturbed by the colors of desire, all of this kind of thing. It is a peaceful mind. So this is the kind of person, right? Bad bodily behavior, bad verbal behavior, but he gets a peaceful mind from time to time. And then some people say, it is unfair. Here I am. I'm practicing so hard, doing all good bodily behavior and all good verbal behavior. I don't get this kind of peace of mind, right? When I meditate, my mind is all over the place, thinking about this, thinking about that. And here is this scallywag doing bad stuff. And this person gets placidity of the mind. Why is that? The world is really unfair. Please, you know, teach me what's going on here. And of course, the answer is that if you have bad bodily conduct, it is very rare that people like that will have placidity of the mind. But sometimes they will, right? Because human beings are so complex. It depends on all our character traits and habits from the past, what kind of karma we have made in the past, all of these kind of things. And sometimes people have done a lot of good things in the past. And that means that they still have a remnant of that in the present life. And that is why they experience that placidity of the mind. Right? And they may be heading in the wrong direction, doing all kind of bad things, and before they know it, they will lose even that placidity of the mind. But for now, at least, they have that one quality, good quality, left in them. Now, this is important to remember, right? Because it's so easy sometimes to judge people on the surface or when they look like it. But when you look a little bit closer, actually, there may be some good qualities there. So what the Venerable Sariputta is saying here, and probably the Buddha as well behind that, is that we should actually look very carefully. We should try to see good qualities wherever they are. We should really strive to see good qualities in the persons. It's a very important part of the path to see those good qualities. And I don't know if you remember, some of you will not remember because you were not here, but I was saying before that there's a hierarchy in the Brahma Viharas, right? We have Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeka. And it's always in the same sequence. Metta is always first. Loving kindness, friendliness, the idea of goodwill to other people is always number one. And only then comes compassion and sympathy comes after that. And here you can see exactly the same thing. We try to give rise to Metta, first of all. All of this idea of focusing on somebody's good qualities is really all about metta practice, right? That's what focusing on the good qualities is about. When you see the good aspect of somebody, that is precisely what metta is about. So what the Buddha is saying is we should go to great length to try to have metta. And then only if that fails, then comes karuna, then comes compassion after that. And that's why the next one in here is about compassion. Because you have exhausted all possibilities, right? You have tried even the most minute good quality in a person. You have tried to find that and practice metta. If that doesn't work, then compassion is the right thing to use after that. So we should go to a large extent as possible to see the good quality. This is how I read this sutta. And sometimes that may just be a mental thing, which can be hard to sometimes spot. And this is why the simile here is given in the way that it is given. There is just a little bit of water in the puddle, right? A little bit of good qualities. And if you are not careful, you have to focus very narrowly down on those good qualities. Look a little bit that way, look a little bit that way, you see bad things. You have to focus on that puddle in a very narrow way. So that is why you don't want to disturb it or stir it up. That is like seeing the bad qualities, right? So because you don't want to do that, you get down on all four and you pretend to be a cow. And then you suck it up straight from the water on the ground because you are thirsty. You go to any length to imbibe those good qualities, even to the point when you kind of get down very humbly on all four like a cow to suck up those good qualities. And that that is the idea there. So again, you have this idea of someone oppressed by the heat, right? Angry and weary, tired, and they're looking for the water. And then when you find that water, of course, you will be so happy, and then you drink it up as a consequence. This is like a person who is a slightly desperate kind of situation. So, again, right, build up those good qualities on that shelf of perception and take them down when you need them. Now we come to the next person, person number four. And it goes as follows. How, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily and verbal behavior are impure, and who does not gain an opening of the mind, placidity of mind, from time to time? Suppose a sick, afflicted, gravely ill person was traveling along a highway, and the last village behind him and the next village ahead of him were both far away. He would not obtain suitable food and medicine or a qualified attendant. He would not get to meet the leader of the village district. Another man traveling along the highway might see him and arouse sheer compassion, sympathy, and tender concern for him, thinking, "Oh, may this man obtain suitable food, suitable medicine, and a qualified attendant. May he get to meet the leader of the village district. For what reason? So that this man does not encounter calamity and disaster right here." So too, when a person's bodily and verbal behavior are impure, and he does not gain from time to time an opening of the mind, placidity of mind, on that occasion one should arouse sheer compassion, sympathy, and tender concern for him, thinking, "Oh, may this venerable one abandon bodily misbehavior and develop good bodily behavior. May he abandon verbal misbehavior and develop good verbal behavior. May he abandon mental misbehavior and develop good mental behavior. For what reason? So that with the breakup of the body after death, he will not be reborn in the plane of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed." So here we have a person where you cannot see any good qualities. All you can see is bad stuff. Right, everything. And as I said before, it doesn't matter so much whether that perception is accurate or not. Very likely it is not entirely accurate. And remember that it will open up the possibility in the future that you might see some good qualities in that person, if you remember that, the unreliability of our perceptions. But anyway, you are incapable of seeing good qualities. And of course, if you cannot see any good qualities, then metta becomes very hard. Metta relies on the idea of seeing good things in others. Here, you can only see the bad things. So you have to have a different approach, a different strategy for dealing with this kind of person in a skillful way. And here is where compassion comes in, right? And the whole point of this particular sutta, or this particular person, is that if somebody really has so many bad qualities and so many negative things going on in their life, well, what it means really, it means that that person is very deluded, because they are creating large amount of suffering for themselves. Anyone who is very difficult, who has lots of bad qualities, the first and foremost person they're creating suffering for is themselves, both in this life and also, of course, for future lives at the same time. And remember that when somebody, and I talked about this already, but it's worthwhile bringing up again, when somebody is creating suffering for themselves, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to create problems for themselves and suffering and sadness and all of these kind of negative things. The only reason why a person does that is because they are deluded, because they are confused, is because they don't understand where true happiness lies, right? That is why you create suffering for themselves. Even a person who is full of bad qualities like that, they think normally that they are doing things that lead to happiness, but they have no idea what they're doing. When somebody is angry, when somebody does something bad, somebody says something bad by speech, usually they think that this will have some kind of positive effect, otherwise they wouldn't do that. They think it's going to lead to happiness one way or another for themselves and possibly also for the other person. They have no idea what they're doing. They are deluded. They are creating suffering for themselves while thinking that they are creating happiness for themselves. Right? So how do you do that when somebody, you know, is about to use the chainsaw and they think they're going to cut the log, but actually they're going to cut their arms instead? What are you going to say? Stop, stop, stop. Don't do that. You're going to cut your arm off. Right? But you can't help them because they're already cutting their arm off. You just have to watch. How do you feel? You feel, oh no, please. You're going down the wrong way. You are deluded. You don't know what you're doing. And this is how our life, people's life often is. They are cutting their arms off all the time. They are, you know, doing all kind of crazy things that leads to enormous suffering in the future. And then, of course, the right attitude is one of compassion, because they are hurting themselves much more than they're hurting anyone else in this world. So this is the right attitude. Regard somebody with all bad qualities with a sense of compassion and sympathy, because they have no idea what they are doing. And it's a very powerful thing, right, to reflect in this way. Normally, when somebody does something to us that is unpleasant or nasty in one way or another, we tend to feel aggrieved. Don't act like that towards me. We are self-concerned. It's a kind of a selfish approach to things. And it's natural that we should have that self-concern. We are close to ourselves, and it's natural. But also, it is very limiting when we have that kind of approach. It is kind of small. It's narrow-minded. We don't really have that expansive heart, which looks at the other people. It's all about us. And when it's all about us, it's very small and narrow in the mind. It's kind of a mean mind state. And when you change this around, and when instead of thinking about yourself, you look at the other person and you understand what they are doing to themselves in the long run, then instead of thinking about yourself, you're turning the table around and you're learning to look at them instead. And then you can have a sense of compassion, even in circumstances when somebody else is hurting you at least a little bit. Right? By turning the table around. A very powerful way of thinking. And of course, a part and parcel of this is many of the things that I've been saying already before during this retreat, and that is the idea that we are conditioned as human beings. We are not what we want to be. We are what we have become because of conditioning going back a long, long, long time into the past. So we are victims of our own past. We are trapped in our personality. We are who we are, not because we want to be that way, but because we are trapped in what we are. We cannot step out of our personality and be somebody else. It's impossible. The qualities that we have are there, and they are a given, and we have to sort of work with those in a certain way. Yeah, and when you realize that, it's the same thing for anyone in this world. Even the people who are really bad, they are also trapped by their conditioning. It's a non-self kind of thing. There's nothing inside of you which is like a firm guide that can guide you in the right way. You are rather being guided, being manipulated by all these things from the past, conditioning you in this way and that way. So these are very powerful ways of reflecting. And very, if you use these ways, it is not that hard to be able to overcome anger, negativity towards almost anyone in this world, regardless of how bad a person they are. So here you have the simile of the sick person, right? The person who is wandering in a place where there are no people, nobody to look after them, there is no medicine, there is no suitable food, nothing is missing, and they are sick. If you are sick and there's nobody to look after you, what's going to happen? The sickness is going to get worse, right? Worse and worse and worse. Until, as it says here, you meet calamity and disaster. You die because of that illness. When somebody is sick, how do you feel about them usually? usually you have compassion for them. It's not their fault that they become sick. It's just the nature of these bodies that we are given that sometimes they get sick. That's what bodies do. And then when somebody is in a difficult situation like that, compassion tends to arise. You want to be kind towards them. You want to help them. If at all possible, you want to kind of get them out of that predicament before they end up in a very bad destination, even going to a very bad rebirth in the future. And sickness and death is a small thing, a small price to pay. Going to a bad destination in the future life is far, far worse. So much even more grounds for compassion in that particular case. So this is what I mean when I talk about using perception, using our ability to reflect in a wise way so as to move away from the defilements and move towards a mind which is much more steady, has much more ability to deal with the problems in life in a steady way. And then you are practicing this path in a much more skillful way by doing that. Okay, so let us have a look at the very last person. So, how, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily and verbal behavior are pure, and who from time to time gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind? So here we have like the saintly person, right? Everything is okay, bodily, verbal behavior, and they get good samadhi. Everything is kind of right. Suppose there were a pond with clear, sweet, cool water, clean with smooth banks, a delightful place, shaded by various trees. Then a man might arrive, afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty and parched. Having plunged into the pond, he would bathe and drink, and then, after coming out, he would sit or lie down in the shade of a tree right there. So too, when a person's bodily and verbal behavior are pure, and from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind, on that occasion one should attend to his pure bodily behavior, to his pure verbal behavior, and to the opening of the mind, the placidity of the mind that he gains from time to time. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. So in this case, we have the person with all so many good qualities, and still that man comes, right, the angry one who's oppressed by the heat. We still get angry with the saints in this world. That's just the nature of things. Not because the saintly people are bad. It's just our own nature, which sometimes kind of messes around with us and gives us the wrong information or whatever. So you still get upset with these people. And you get weary and thirsty, looking for a solution. But in this case, the solution is always close at hand, right? Because the pond, there is no algae, there is no water plants there. You can just plunge in and bathe and drink. Cool yourself down. Get rid of that oppressive anger by seeing all the good qualities that are there. And then the interesting things, after you see all those good qualities, you drink and bathe and take them on board. After you come down, you don't carry on. You don't go anywhere else. You sit and lie down in the shade of a tree right there. In other words, it is almost as if, well, after getting rid of the anger, it's almost as if this is your Kalyanamitta. This is somebody worth hanging out with. This might be the Buddha, might be an Arahant, might be an Arya. Somebody who has gone practicing really well on this path. Somebody really worth taking as your friend. So you hang out with that person. You stay there. You stay in the shade of a beautiful tree on that smooth bank right there, and you enjoy that friendship. And of course then, by doing that, that is when the whole path becomes possible, as we saw earlier on this retreat. So, interesting kind of twist at the end there with this last person. And that is why it says in the very last line, friends, by means of a person who inspires confidence in every way, the mind gains confidence. So you hang out with that person because they inspire confidence, and then you gain confidence as a consequence of that. And that, of course, that confidence, that is the beginning, really, of the practice of the path itself, and you move on from there. So that is the very last person of these five, and it's good to be aware of that. Sometimes in the suttas you find people getting angry even with the Buddha, right? So these things happen, and that is kind of the thing, and this is the problem. And it is not because it is their fault, but because our minds are sometimes built like that. You get angry with almost anyone. This is just the nature of things. These, friends, are the five ways of removing resentment by means of which a bhikkhuni, a layperson, whoever, can entirely remove resentment towards whomever it has arisen. So there you are. This is one of the suttas that I like a lot in the Pali Canon, because it is so very practical and very down to earth and very useful for almost anyone. And I think that if there's anything on the spiritual path that people should focus on, it is precisely this kind of thing of overcoming the anger and negativity. It has such tremendous beneficial consequences in terms of our overall conduct, in terms of our meditation practice, in terms of our friendship with other people. People start to love you, right? Isn't that great? If people start to love you more, it's nice to have many friends, right? Eventually you have so many friends, you don't want to have any more friends. You say, please, go away. And that's where the problem starts to arise. But it has so many beneficial consequences when we have more time for other people, more compassion, more understanding, and we're able to reduce that negativity and ill will. Remember, many of you, I'm sure you already have lots of good qualities already, but most people, very rare to find somebody who hasn't got any kind of ill will. Most people still have at least a little bit, and we can always do more to reduce it even further. And by reducing it further, you will gain benefits from that, and that is then will then carry you on this path in a great way. So, there you are. That is the sutta on resentment and ill will. So let's have another break for half an hour, and we'll see you back here at 4:45 again.